Survivor's Guide to True Crime includes discussions of sexually based violence and is not intended for children. Information provided should not be used as a substitute for professional medical or legal advice. Please exercise discretion and self-care. Welcome back to Survivor's Guide to True Crime. I'm Kim.
And I'm Kara. And I am feeling like an actual human for once.
Welcome back, Kara.
I feel like I'm coming back from the dead. I've felt like not even a half of a human for a couple months now. And I feel somewhat normal. And I've started drinking coffee somewhat again. And I just getting things done.
You worked out this morning. I saw a million emails all of a sudden. I'm like, she's back. Fine. It's as if you went away to Italy and you didn't like
and I
necessarily. I have been going it alone over here, guys.
And I've basically been gone since May.
I've been lonely.
Yeah, you know, it was really, really hard for me to like start working again after Italy. And then I just got really sick and laid in bed for literally a month and a half. I simply laid in bed, watched Yellowstone, all of Yellowstone.
Yeah. Did you love it?
Yeah, it's so good. But the funny thing is that I was like, what series can I watch that I can binge while I'm just laying in here in bed? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I think I'm going to rewatch Game of Thrones because I haven't rewatched it since it initially came out.
Right.
And I was like, I'll start watching this. And then my husband started watching it with me. So then it became like, well, I can't watch this by myself while I'm laying in bed. Right. And I was like, okay, what else can I watch by myself? I was like, I'll start watching Yellowstone. He's already seen that. And then he started watching that with me. So I'm like, what can I watch? But it's just me here, like laying in bed by myself. So I've like gotten stuck in that thing. I feel like, does everyone do this? Do you guys do this? Like you have a show and you're like, well, I can't watch it without my spouse or my significant other.
Oh, yeah. And if you skip ahead, it's like
death to your marriage.
Oh, mm-hmm. Pretty much.
Vows have been broken.
I found that if I just find really rom-com, brain dead kind of stuff, that then I can watch that on my own. And of course, it's always because I'm multitasking. I'm not just going to sit down and binge something and not be doing something else. And so those are the ones that Mike won't watch.
Yeah.
Case in
like
point.
Bridgerton. I'll do like the Bridgerton stuff or like Love is Blind.
And we're back to this. Lovely. Okay, wait. On Bridgerton, so I only watched the first season and then I did watch Queen Charlotte, right?
Mm-hmm. Queen Charlotte.
Mike walked through at one point when I was watching. He's like, is this porn?
I mean, basically, softcore.
I had no idea. I'm like, I don't know. I'm feeling
I don't
very
know what I'm watching.
Did I ever tell you about the time I was listening to an audiobook?
Oh, girl. This is going to be my worst fear come to life.
I am not mature enough for this. And I was outside. I think I was just picking up dog poop or weeding or something. And I had my AirPods and listening to it. And like the narrator is saying penis. And I am giggling like I am in middle school. He walks out. He's like, what are you doing? And I'm blushing because they're saying penis in my ear holes. That sounds really weird. That phrasing was off there.
Yep. That was problematic.
I cannot handle it though.
Okay. So don't listen to the Bridgerton audiobooks then.
Oh no, I'm out.
Yeah. I read a lot of different genres, but I read a lot of fantasy and then inevitably that overlaps into like fantasy romance. And then I read like historical fiction and like not murder mystery type thrillers, but the thrillers where you're like, oh my God, I have no idea what's going to happen. Because
really good twists.
Yes, because I know that you will agree with this because people with ADHD are really good at spotting patterns.
I know exactly where you're going.
Yeah, I can almost always figure out for a TV show, movie, series, book, whatever. I can almost always figure out where it's going. Mm-hmm. I think even Inception, which is just like... I was like, oh, I know what's going to happen. Or there's another one that was like really twisty turny like that. And I told Joe, it's the one with Denzel Washington's son, I think, where they like go back in time. They like reverse time. Do you know what movie I'm talking about?
Denzel Washington. Well, I know Frequency. I love Frequency. We've talked about this before. I love Frequency with Dennis Quaid.
I have to look it up now. What's his son's name? Donnie Washington. Is that right?
He has a son.
Oh, girl. Yeah. He's a very good actor. Anyway, yeah, I can almost always figure it out. So there's been quite a few books that I've read recently, like The Perfect Marriage was one by Geneva Rose, which I found out about her on TikTok. And so that one is a good like thriller. And similar is Verity by Colleen Hoover. So if you have heard of Colleen Hoover, she's traditionally a romance author. But this is like her one off where she does like a thriller and twists and turns like all the way up to the last couple pages of the book. So those are the kind of things that I generally read. But whenever I'm reading, you know, like A Court of Thorn and Roses or something, for instance, I mean, they're so good.
That was one you recommended. And I forgot to take care of my family or eat or drink or do anything.
I know. It's so good. If you like that one, I will tell you, definitely read Throne of Glass. It's better. Like the fantasy world of it is better. There's less romance, less of that like overt sexual tension kind of romance in the book.
Yeah.
But the series itself, I was putting it off because I read so many books that sometimes I have to take a break from fantasy because they all kind of like overlap. And I'm like, my brain is too full of magical worlds. So weird.
Which in and of itself may be a form of dissociation, but who cares? We don't need to unpack it. We could just enjoy it.
Right. I'm curious how many people who are listening and how many survivors also like escapism books, because I don't read serious books that often. People be like, you have to read this self-help book. And I'm like, no, thanks.
No. Hard pass.
I want to turn my brain off. I want to read Outlander. I want to read something else.
You know what I just thought of while you were saying that? Twilight was my escapism. Like you talk about how obsessive I am about Twilight things, but that was during a time. Right. But that was a good time where I'm like, oh my God, I absolutely want to escape from real life. And it just happened to be in those books and then the movie and then MTV blog posts and New Moon Mondays and like down the rabbit hole. We know everybody. somewhere someone is going to dig up that video that MTV has of me. They have of me after the Spoilers premiere, and I'm talking about something about being so excited that I peed my pants. Sorry to the cleanup crew. Someone's going to dig that up on the internet someday. Because it was on the MTV website for the longest time, and this would have been in what, 2008? I'm not even sorry anymore. Like, I'm just owning all of my freaking weird. Oh, wave my flag, my pink freak flag.
Y'all, we were talking before we started recording about obsessive personality. And I'm just thinking of Kim being like, I pee my pants. It just, oh my God. We started talking about this because we were talking about what Kim did a couple days ago, which is, what did you do, Kim?
I went to church.
She went to church.
Jesus was worshiping me.
Jesus is the forgiver. Forgive our sins.
I ain't needing forgiving for nothing. God was there and her name was Taylor Swift.
Oh my God.
So, okay.
Keep going. You're not the same. So in case anyone has been wondering how I feel about Taylor Swift, she's fine. Like she's a great artist. She is fantastic. She's beautiful and wonderful, but that's really all I got. And so Kim and I were discussing this and what did you say, Kim?
I'm sitting on my hands and biting my lip right now, but it's fine.
Yeah.
I don't even know what I said. It was probably
so the difference is because I was racking my brain and I was like, who or what have I ever felt that excited about ever?
Well, and it was because I asked Mike.
Yes.
Because we were getting all of our friendship bracelets made. Like the kids and I and my mom stayed up one night watching Taylor Swift videos and interviews, making friendship bracelets. It was so much fun. Like, just so much fun. But we got home at like midnight. Mike's like, what are you doing? I'm like, we're getting ready for the concert. He's like, he does not understand at all. I'm putting together my costume, which was amazingly over the top because no one will ever accuse me at my funeral of ever being underdressed for something. And I was asking him, like, haven't you ever felt something that just gives you immense, overwhelming joy and like obsessive happiness about something? No. But that's him. And also, that's you.
It's me. You know, some of our, I would say most of our listeners probably remember Grumpy Cat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's me.
Your face was definitely
a very large period of time that I identified as Grumpy Cat. And I believe it was even my profile photo on Instagram. I mean, not Instagram, on Facebook for a while, because I was like, this is me. Like, I'm like, yeah, it's funny. Mm-hmm. I mean, the only thing I can think of that I feel like that passionate about is potatoes
and nachos.
And you like, you know, I threw up nachos recently and they've lost their shine.
What?
I know, they've really lost their shine for me. Yeah. Potatoes and like croissants. That's all I got.
See, whereas I love to love something to the point that it becomes nauseating.
I want to learn
that it's my personality. I want to know all of the fun things. And it's one of those, it's like, it's not hurting anybody. It's a positive, happy, affirming thing where there's a community of other people who can be as excited and obsessive about these things. And it doesn't hurt anyone. It annoys some people. And for that, I do not care. Mainly my husband, again, do not care. And I got home. Oh my gosh. I can't even put into words how incredible that experience was just from start to finish. And yes, I was super stressed trying to get myself ready, both of the littles, my niece, everything packed to go tailgate because we could not afford to stay in a hotel down in Denver. It would have made it so much easier, but everything was like $1,000 a night. It was insane. I'd also like to throw out there that you've probably seen a lot of things about the resale value of these tickets. And Mike said, he's like, if you just died and we sold your tickets, that's worth more than your life insurance policy right now.
Cool. You could easily pay for your funeral, Kimberly.
It's like, Carol will create a podcast about this after me. Thank you. Yeah. I did not light up a room when I walked into it. All right. Thanks. Step off Dateline. But it was like, we wouldn't have been able to go if we would have had to buy them off of third party sites. We got them from Ticketmaster directly. That very first time, I have the most exciting video of when the sale finally went through and the kids are standing right behind me and we just start screaming. And it really hasn't stopped since November, but getting to take them to their very first concert to see it there in a sold out stadium, just the stamina of her as an artist, a person. I had to sit down during her 3-hour set.
Yeah,
I'm old. I had to sit down for a little bit because my feet hurt and she's up there kicking ass and performing this entire, 45 songs or something, our surprise song. So there's a set where she does acoustic or piano and she always does 2 surprise songs per concert and you never know what they're going to be until she starts playing them. I lost my mind, screaming, jumping. My mom has a video of it. It's really funny that I put on TikTok. And I ended up, for as much as I love Taylor Swift and she was such a huge part of my growing up and life and such, I think I watched my kids more than I watched her in the concert, because watching them experience that joy and connection and just overwhelming fun and happiness that was free of, let's talk about this, free of any toxicity, period, was just, I was so grateful for that environment that was created. It was like, it's the girls and the gays and the Swifty dads and the husbands who are there supporting their Swifty girlfriends, spouses, partners, whatever it is. I left my tailgate hanging wide open in the parking lot with all of our stuff out so that I could run over to the merch line when my mom got in the front and didn't think twice about it. I sent my son into the men's bathroom because I wasn't worried about who was going in or out. I wasn't worried about having things stolen or being grabbed or groped or looked at in a weird way. It was just positive from start to finish and such a cool, fun experience. And it was a massive core memory for them that they'll never forget. And I surely won't. But yeah, obsessive to the max, non-apologetic about it. And I know that we have a lot of Swiftie fans that are listeners too. So I'll keep putting things up. But I finally got to reveal my outfit that I'd been working on. And it was Sweet Like Justice. So I
was pretty epic.
Dressed as Justice from her Karma video. And it was like the Greek goddess Themis, who is, you know, the scales of justice and such. I got a lot of compliments on it. It was fabulous.
It was really cool. Well, I think one of the things that you said and that I saw, because you sent me a picture of you and your daughter, which, by the way, I saw that photo and like the absolute pure joy on your face and her face. Like I showed it to my husband too. And we both started crying. And I was like, crying. But there's just something really, this is something I've realized in the last year. There is something really healing to our traumas and our childhoods about seeing your children so full of joy and really living their best lives. So like, that's the thing that I think is really cool and really exciting about being able to give your kids these experiences. So I love it.
You know what else I read that was really weird? People are talking about not being able to remember the concerts. And I know we had touched on this in one of the previous episodes, but it's because it activates your same like fight or flight, freeze appease sort of mechanism. Like you are in a very activated state. And if you are a trauma survivor, your body and your mind might not be able to tell the difference between that overwhelming, excitable joy and the fact that you are also safe.
Yes.
If you have only known trauma and hypervigilance, and you have that huge, overwhelming feeling where your chest is just bursting with happiness and joy, being able to sit in that moment and take it in for what it is, much like when you got your car and had these moments where you can just be, separating that from trauma is kind of hard. And I was on guard for that the entire time too, to make sure that I wasn't activated. And now in hindsight, I'm like, oop, all during the day, I was stressed out trying to make sure everything was done and perfect and that I didn't miss anything. And that was my trauma response because I was in such a heightened state. And then to be able to get in there and just take a breath because we are in a safe place where they can dance and scream and enjoy and be as loud as they want to. I was like, okay. And I was able to just fully immerse myself and enjoy it. And my Tiny came out from New York because she's a huge Swiftie with me from the OG days. And but yeah, that picture, I am dying not being able to, I mean, it's just me not sharing it. So I would love to. I may break my own rule because it is just this immense.
It's so pure.
It is. It's this immense. Oh my God.
I know. I'm telling you, like the second I looked at it, first of all, Kim and I were already talking about baby names, which I will maybe share, maybe on the Patreon. And Kim and I don't really share kids' names, so I don't know. But we were already talking about baby names. And one of the names that I love is very close to your daughter's name. And the middle name is the same. And so we were already talking about that, which had me kind of sentimental. And then you sent that picture. And I was just like, started crying. And I showed it to Joe. And he was like, oh my God, what's happening? And I was like,
dude, it's just like that moment, overwhelming joy, freedom. There has to be a name for this. How is there not a name for this? I've heard glimmers. This was more than a glimmer. This was like a full circle spotlight in your eyes.
Mm-hmm. It's like forming a new core memory as an adult.
Yes.
That's what there was this one particular day, and I know I've talked about it to you, and I'm pretty sure I've talked about it on the podcast, but there was one day or it was pouring down rain outside, and there was literally like a river running down the road. For those of you who don't know, we're in the country, basically. Like, it's not a paved road. We live at the end of a dirt road. And so there's like a river running down the road into the lake. And it wasn't storming. It was just raining. And the boys were like, can we go outside and play? And I was like, abso-freaking-lutely. Go out there. Like, that sounds so fun. And I was just sitting inside looking out the window at them running and splashing and like squealing. And they were so happy and they were so full of magic and wonder and this pure, undiluted joy that I just started crying.
Yeah.
And I was like, that is beautiful. And that's what it feels like, the new formation of a core memory. It feels like a childhood wonder and joy moment. It's like recapturing that, which I feel like for trauma survivors is difficult. For adults is really difficult. And so I don't know. I don't know what the name for that is. Maybe we just have to create one.
Probably.
If you have any great ideas, let us know, because we clearly are at a loss for them.
Yeah. Overwhelming euphoria that can only be cherished from someone who has felt the absolute depths and the opposite of what that moment is.
Right?
What is that? That's what this moment was. We need a name for it.
Yeah. It's like intense juxtaposition to what you felt. Yeah. I don't know. It's awesome. And if you guys have ever felt that, please share. Let us know what your moments are, because I think it's just, glimmers are great, but this is just next level. And I think maybe once you start to be more aware of your blessings, of the reasons you have to be grateful, maybe you're better able to notice and like sit in those moments. And maybe that's where part of it comes from. But yeah, I think it's just, it's beyond a glimmer, and it's so wonderful and magical. And I love it. So transitioning now to our guest today.
So today we have Lauren Weingarten on the podcast. I am really happy to be inviting her on. I know she has a really accomplished career, but has just started into the world of speaking and really sharing her story on educational platforms, and is looking into doing more speaking engagements. And I have been following her now for a few years online. If you follow her on Instagram, you know her as Me Too Many Voices, so MTMV. But Lauren Weingarten, who's she, her, is a credentialed victim advocate with the NACP and a certified trauma support specialist. She's the voice and founder of the MTMV Community Support Network, one of the first online-based support communities established for survivors and supporters of survivors.
Before MTMV, Weingarten had a successful decades-long career working behind the scenes in TV and film production. She's since found purpose in understanding trauma and leading conversations surrounding abuse and sexual violence to build and foster a community amongst survivors and their supporters.
With years of advocacy training and trauma education, Weingarten is focused on developing survivor-led peer support groups, workshops, and virtual community events, bridging local and global communities alike.
She also works as a consultant, helping research teams and professional organizations strengthen their survivor-informed care. She also loves pizza, falafel, and tending to her plants.
So here is our conversation with Lauren.
Lauren, thank you so much for joining us today. It's an honor to have you here, and we are really looking forward to getting to know you.
It is an honor to be here. Thank you so much for hosting this podcast and inviting me on.
Of course. So there's a little something that we do at the beginning of every interview, just to sort of break the ice here. But what is your latest binge, whether it's TV show, movies, podcasts, books? What's something that you just can't put down, can't get enough of? What is your current binge?
I would say either that TV show, Is It Cake?, where the whole hook is this like an object or is this cake? So I don't know if that says great about the show or where I'm at, where I'm like, is that cake?
It is so compelling. My kids and I love that show too. Like inevitably, if we're in between, can't figure out what to watch, I'll watch that with them. It's so hard. I never get them right. I never know if it's cake.
Yeah, same. Same. And there's tons of videos that you can watch online as well, but that's basically them cutting into objects that turn out to be cake. And that's one of my coping skills, just binging 30 minutes of, is this cake or is this a shoe video?
Is this cake or is this trauma?
You should trademark that.
Yeah. Do you also watch Nailed It then?
I have not, but I feel like I probably should.
You should. If you like Is It Cake, you'll love Nailed It. It's like the fun of Is It Cake, but like self-deprecating humor where it's like normal people who are not bakers and they give them these confectionery masterpieces. And they're like, you have 2 hours to make this 12-level fondant masterpiece. And they're always bad. It's so funny.
We talked about this when we were interviewing Amanda Knox as well, because she loves Great British Bake Off and she had not watched it yet. And all I can keep thinking of is the SNL routine where Eddie Murphy's on there and they're doing like a Nailed It sort of competition. It looks nothing like it's supposed to. And they're like, what is that? And he's like, oh, don't be confused. That's just Satan in your mom or your grandmama's voice trying to trick you and drag you to hell.
That sounds hilarious. I'm going to have to go look that skit up as well as the show. It kind of sounds like baking for people with trauma. So,
or it is traumatic. We don't know. Yeah, it's pretty funny. I think the best part is that these people are laughing at themselves. You know, they show this and they're like, nailed it.
Yep.
It's not good. So,
got to have a sense of humor about it for sure.
Totally. I kind of sort of really want to do that someday just because I know that I am so very bad at it.
I just want to make the Elsa frozen cake and watch the face slide down as it's being judged.
I can so see you doing that.
Many things. I also want to serve on a jury. So, you know, my bucket list is very diverse. Anyway, thank you so much for being here. Besides cake, tell us a little bit to your comfort level about your story. What brings you to Survivor's Guide to True Crime?
Yeah, that is an excellent question. Again, thank you so much for having me. And I think that what you are doing and by survivors for survivors is something that, you know, when you reached out, it was like, yes, because I love that. I just personally think there's just too much exploitation of survivor storytelling and survivor experiences. So I love the podcast for starters. As you mentioned in the introduction, my name is Lauren Weingarten. I am a credentialed victim advocate and a certified trauma support specialist, community builder. I run the online community MTMV Community Support Network. This line of work is not anything that I ever saw myself doing. I think probably like many of us, our life have taken kind of unexpected turns that have led us into this line of work. I worked in TV film production for decades before I had my own Me Too moment. I kind of feel like working in the film industry, every moment is kind of a Me Too moment. It's just a very toxic space and is like 5 years out of the industry and starting to realize all my cute, fun work stories are actually just like coping mechanisms from the years of trauma, and they're not funny stories. I worked in TV film production for decades. And then in 2018, I was working as an assistant on a show, and I was raped by the lead actor of the show, and it forever changed my life. Surrounding that, I was working, you know, 80, 100 hour weeks, was forced to work with my perpetrator, hearing that him just walking across the screen was pure magic. And the show itself was already really toxic, a lot of harassment, bullying. As all survivors do, we do our best to survive. And unfortunately, in a world that is not conducive to supporting us, I kept trying to come forward about other bullying, harassment on the show. Was told to sweep it under the rug, not to ruffle any feathers. And as someone who worked below the line crew for, you know, 12, 15 years, you never want to ruffle any feathers. Unfortunately, if you bring up a problem, you become the problem. And unfortunately, you're way too easy to be eliminated in that sense. And there's a lot of power dynamics at play. My health was declining. I ended up having a complete breakdown and actually attempted to take my own life. And while I did that, you know, the network came through, threatened people's jobs, made them sign non-disclosure agreements, told them not to speak to me. They, you know, ran an investigation while I lay unconscious in the hospital. And when I came out, none of my peers would talk to me. It took me months to figure out why, where all my friends had gone. When you have a giant media conglomerate telling you not to speak to somebody and threatening your job and livelihood, as hard as it is, you know, that's unfortunately one of these realities about trying to come out and speak out about some of these things. Yeah, from there, you know, kind of rejoining the world, so to speak, I basically had to start over. Everything I had worked for my entire adult life and beyond, career-wise, was gone. I was blacklisted. All the abusers have gone on to continue to have healthy careers, thriving in the industry. I moved. I was really lost. And I started learning more about trauma and understanding the dynamics of abuse, power dynamics, power and control, understanding trauma, realizing, okay, wait a second, I'm not crazy. The way I responded actually makes a lot of sense. And the more I learned about trauma, it was just very much a big catalyst in my healing journey. And so I kept taking classes and getting certifications that honestly I didn't even use for a while because I didn't really feel ready to be an advocate, hold space for others. But at the same time, getting that education and learning was really, really life-changing in such a positive way for me. And I started MTMV. Can't believe it's been about 4.5 years ago. And when I started it, it was an anonymous page. I don't think that I revealed myself, so to speak, for like a year and a half, maybe longer, while running the page. I never expected it to get as big as it did, to turn into the amazing community that it has. Yeah, community is justice.
I love the way that you just put that. It's true. Finding your people who understand you or maybe want to better understand just the issue in general can feel like a sense of justice. How have you felt as you've gone along this journey? You aren't just reinventing your career. You're having to completely find yourself again. I've heard a lot of people talk about who they were before versus after. And how have you felt in that transition from who you were before to who you are now? What are some things that you've noticed?
I've definitely noticed some significant changes. Trauma really changes the way we view the world, the way we view ourselves, the relationship with the world, with the relationship with ourselves. And I am definitely much more of a reserved, cautious person than I used to be. I used to have like Pippi Longstocking red hair and just feisty. And I mean, you can't ever take the feist or fighter out of somebody, but it's almost, you know, channeled differently. It shows up in a different way. I think I'm tired a lot more. I think when you spend a lot of time surviving, there's just not enough room for all the bullshit. And it's just a lot more exhausting. And my give a damn is kind of broken a lot more. At the same time, I think that I like myself more. And to be clear, I'm going to go ahead and take all the credit. You know, this is not because of what was done to me, finding a silver lining, but I do think that all the necessary work that I did as part of my healing journey, that is part of my current healing journey, it has made me get to know my true self more, kind of shed some of those fawning layers that I've had since I was a kid, responses. Yeah, I do think that I've gotten to know myself a little bit better and be okay with people not liking me as much. It's like, been there, lost it all. I feel good and confident about this. You're on the support survivors / Lauren train or not.
I love that. And I think that's something that Kim and I talk about amongst ourselves, but maybe we haven't talked about a ton on the podcast, specifically when you said your give a damn meter is broken. And there was an episode that we did talk about this, where it's kind of like it takes a lot more in some ways to put us into those moments where it seems like there's a real sense of urgency about something. The things that would stress other people out, you're just kind of like, really? That's what you're worried about? And I don't want to put words into your mouth, but that's a conversation that Kim and I actually have had very recently. I thought it was really interesting when you were talking about the silver linings, because that's also something that we seem to come back to a lot in these conversations of the difference between the everything happens for a reason mentality and the ability to find reason in the things that happen, even if it's not something that's quote unquote positive or good, how we can sort of take the power back and what that looks like. You know, we have these conversations often of what it means to kind of take your power back in those moments, what it looks like, and how do you get there? So if you want to speak to any of those things, we would love to hear about you taking your power back and really just learning to love yourself, because that's one of the things you said too, like you like yourself better now. So we would love to hear, how did you get there? Because we have a variety of listeners who run the gamut in the spectrum of saying, how, but how do you get there? How do you lose those fawning behaviors? How do you love yourself more? What does that look like? What did that look like for you?
Oh, it's so hard. I wish that I could just like pull out a guidebook and go, okay, so what you're going to want to do here is, and I think part of that is that we all are so unique and have our own unique experiences that we're bringing to the table, that there are as many different ways as we are traumatized and experience abuse and harm. There's also ways for us to take our power back and to heal. And so I think, A, that's pretty cool in itself. The fact that we can literally rewire our brain. And I certainly don't want to come off as though like I'm healed, because I don't really see healing as that you like wake up one day and suddenly I'm healed, life is good. But I think that healing happens a lot in the little moments that are actually the huge moments of progress. And so I certainly have my days, but I think me being able to be on this podcast here and talking about it, it's like, okay, look at me. Like, that's a green flag that I have been doing the work and being compassionate with myself, which I think is one of the big things, is that actually working as a victim advocate. And I mean, at this point, I've probably facilitated hundreds of support groups, workshops. I do one-on-one support with survivors from all over the world. And that telling them to be compassionate with themselves and understanding trauma responses, you get to feel pretty hypocritical if you're not doing that for yourself as well and holding yourself accountable, good or bad, you know, for everything that comes with that healing and that you're constantly bringing up, chatting about in groups. It's really interesting how much that has actually helped my journey. Not that other people's like trauma are my fortitude, but in reminding them to be compassionate, understanding, curious with themselves, really opened the door to continue to do that work for myself.
It's a nice feedback loop, right? I know that if I'm going to be helping other people through this, I need to be continuously doing the work too. Have you seen those things that are like, I said I'm healing, not healed? That's all I can keep thinking of. I am a work in progress as well. If I am going to be doing this on such a large scale like you are going to see me stumble. It's not necessarily that I'm giving you a guidebook, but I'm helping you write your own. And I love how you pulled all of that together.
We are so thankful for all of your support. We're also supported by Cured. They are a supplement company that is changing the industry standard for how supplements are made. They are products that I use every day that have genuinely changed my life. Kara, of course, is the one who introduced me to them, and I was a little hesitant at first, but I can say after using their products for the last couple of months, I'm hooked.
My favorites that I think everyone should try and will love are the Serenity, Zen, and Rise. Serenity gummies have ashwagandha, L-theanine, and CBD. They're going to help you to just relax, take the edge off at the end of a long day or whenever you need it. Zen is going to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and sleep soundly. Hallelujah. And Rise is going to give you sustained energy and focus without caffeine or without a crash.
I was really hesitant to try anything I view as a sleep aid, but I can say after incorporating Zen into my nighttime routine, I am getting such better sleep.
Yes. And for all of our listeners, you can use code KARA10, go to curednutrition.com or go to the link in our show notes to take you straight to the website. We hope that you love it as much as we do.
I started following you on Instagram, I believe, before you had done your reveal of who you actually were. It was just the Instagram account and the information that you were putting out and the support in the comments. Let's talk about building an organic community that comes to your defense and is able to be there for each other in the comment section. That's what this is. And I have loved watching it grow into such a force. And my favorite is seeing people that maybe I haven't talked to or I just randomly follow and they'll share something from your page or a post or something. I'm like, oh, I know her. I know her. And it's so exciting to me every single time. So I want to talk a little bit about how you started that. What was the impetus that's like, I'm going to start putting things online. I'm going to start curating this content or putting out what is ultimately your voice, but on behalf of all of these survivors. What did that project look like to you?
Yeah. And first off, I remember you following you from like way back when, and it's been fun to kind of grow together with this. So yes, it was about 4.5 years ago, and I felt so, so alone. As alone and as confused as I felt confident that maybe there were other people in their own pocket of the world feeling similarly to some of the things that I was going through. I had tried looking up how much building a forum would be, which is actually really expensive and takes a lot of labor to do. And just on the front end, not to mention like running it, you know, kind of keeping in a safe community. And it was just very much out of access for me able to do. So I was like, I'm going to start an Instagram page, never expecting it to grow. I never expected to say, hey, my name is Lauren. This is my story. It was really a place for people to come together to maybe feel a little bit less alone, or that thing they were going through. Maybe somebody else had advice or resonated with it or just wanted someone to sit with. It turns out, which is always kind of sobering and sad, how many people did resonate with that and how many people were looking for a space. And I think it really speaks to how important online communities and online spaces were. And especially with the pandemic the past few years, when there's been a lot of isolation or people, you know, sheltering at home with their abusers, just so much even more need for community. That's definitely when I saw the community almost double, I think, within like a year or so of itself. And not everybody has access to support. Not everybody has a crisis center they could go to or even know how to, but social media has become such a fabric of our lives that people are going to feel even just a little more comfortable searching for hashtags or looking for videos, you know, on their phone, on these social media accounts. And it's a little less intimidating than going to these sterile buildings, talking to somebody that you don't know. And with MTMV, I've often had people ask me like, well, how did you get such a big following? And it's like, A, the word following is like, it's building a community. Like, I don't see them as my followers. Like, whoever coined that term, like, it doesn't always apply. Like, that's what it's called. But kind of as you were mentioning in the comment section, one of my favorite things is, you know, I'll post something, engage with some comments, maybe go make lunch, go do a session with somebody, whatever, come back. And other people from the community are supporting other people. And I think that's a really big difference between having an audience and building a community and really wanting to engage with the people who are engaging back with you. I've been really lucky because another great thing about virtual support and the work that I do is it allows me to work with people all over the world. And I do. Talking about not having access, you know, some people live in countries where women aren't allowed to decide if they can have surgery for themselves. So it's just a great place to be able to bring people together. It's given me my voice back a lot. It made me feel like people actually were interested what I had to say too, because I lost a lot of confidence after everything that happened. I feel so lucky. I mean, I know people tell me a lot that they're so lucky to have MTMV, that they're glad that I'm there to support them. But truthfully, the community has given me such purpose. And as we said at the beginning, you know, community is justice. Since I probably will never be getting justice in quote unquote the traditional sense, finding alternative ways like this, you know, taking your power back, letting it grow.
Community is justice.
Yes,
it is. It is resonating.
It's so good. And one of the things I was thinking as you were talking too, it's what brought Kim and I together is social media. I think one of the unique tools, especially right now with social media, is the algorithms that they have created in the last couple of years that have really just taken off, where if you like, comment, engage in anything that is related to your type of comment, then your content will be pushed. And so there's just so many people that felt like you felt, that felt alone. And it's so empowering to me. And it's so uplifting to know that people that might feel alone, they might be getting on their phone to dissociate from their trauma, and your content might show up exactly what they needed to see and hear. And I just am so eternally grateful that there are people who are creating these communities and doing this work, because this is how people heal. People heal by not feeling so alone, by being supported, by learning that they're not crazy or weird or abnormal for responding the way they responded. And I think it's so important. And I just feel so passionate about it because, just like you said, there are so many ways to heal. And you absolutely can heal from taking in content and learning about yourself. I mean, I think there's so many ways. And I'm just so glad that you are doing this. So I just want to give you accolades and affirmation of what you're doing, because it's awesome.
So something that we talked about just before we started recording as well was pulling back the curtain here. A question that you had posed to us was whether or not you should name your abuser during this interview. And I want to talk with you a little bit about what that process looks like, why we will or won't, and what some of this emotional labor really looks like for survivors. Because as we're talking about all these wonderful things that we can do online, there's also the dark side of the internet and the dark side of these abusers who are, as you said, very litigious in going after survivors and silencing them. So again, to your comfort level, talk a little bit about what this looks like for you to navigate.
Oh, great question. Thank you.
Loaded question, I know.
Yeah, I mean, but honestly, aren't they all kind of, because survivors are constantly in these like no-win situations. I feel like no one tells you how much of like survivorship is having to make like one hard decision after the other without any real like foundation or information like to help guide you. Again, so there's no right or wrong way to do it because we're all trying to figure it out. None of us should ever be in the situation to begin with. And I have said this before, I will say it again. Society thinks that survivors have a lot more support than we actually do. And I think that there really is not that great of infrastructure to support survivors. And I think it's really challenging because there's so much encouragement. Come forward, speak out, share your story. And then there's not actually that support there to help survivors. And it's unfortunate, but healing justice, it shouldn't be a privilege, but it often is because not everybody has access to it or just the numerous complications and challenges because we're trying to do authentic storytelling, healing in these systems that are not trauma-informed, that are built upon these racist, misogynistic like tenets. And it's really, really abrasive to go through that as a survivor. I came out kind of soon after the Me Too movement that happened in, you know, 2017, 2018. And there was a lot of, we're going to support you, we're here. But in actuality, those supports were not there. And it put me in a lot of unsafe situations. The lawyer that was referred to me from an organization that's supposed to be supporting survivors ended up being incredibly abusive. So I ended up settling a civil law case to get out of another abusive situation, reporting to the police. I wish that as much money, time, and resources that went into silencing survivors went into supporting them rather than supporting the perpetrators of the harm. You know, that would be great because having the resources, whether that's having the lawyer, having the friend that your family member, whoever, advocate that you can call after speaking to the police, having the internal resources. It's like we ask people to come forward, but are they at a place where it's literally safe for them to be doing from an internal standpoint? Not to mention then we have all the external factors. And I know we talked about whether or not to name people and several thoughts. Ultimately, this is my story. You know, this is the story of survivors. This is the work that, you know, we're doing. And not that they don't matter, but also kind of they don't matter, you know. But also, there is so much legitimate fear and concerns about liability on litigious lawyers, because as hard as it is for survivors to find a trauma-informed, survivor-informed lawyer who's, you know, willing to represent you, you then have to go against these, often these really powerful, in my instance, you know, Hollywood industry attorney. You know, I've been threatened to be sued for defamation since 2018 because they found out I spoke to a rape crisis center.
I'm sorry. What?
Yeah, I knock on wood. I've been threatened since 2018 when they found out that I spoke to my local rape crisis center. Other fun fact, I actually filmed at that same rape crisis center working on the TV show I was assaulted on. They rented out their offices and then that's where I had to go for supposedly healing.
Oh my God.
And again, it's like there's not these infrastructures to support survivors. And I often look back and I'm like, No wonder it's been so hard. I'm literally expected to heal where I worked with the person who harmed me, who is now encapsulated in like film or whatever. It's just, well, those are some of my own like kind of specific. Can you believe this happened? Every survivor has their laundry list because that's what it's like to navigate. And trauma is not a one-time event. You know, these are things that we're constantly having to navigate, deal with, often on our own without little support. That same rape crisis center ended up falsifying my documentation to cover for the police. And I was told I wasn't allowed a lawyer and all these other things. And then they had admitted to interfering, that the investigation was interfered with. And the rape crisis center went back in and falsified all the documentation to try to cover for all of that. So again, it's like I have so much documentation of all of this stuff. And that's the thing about evidence. If you don't have somebody to look at it and like, I don't know, we can do a podcast about evidence another time. Some thoughts on that. I think I broke both of you.
Kim and I are just like, I'm malfunctioning.
We have these moments like every episode where we're just like, what?
Quick question. What the fuck?
But also, I'm so glad you're speaking to this because I don't feel like this aspect of it is something that we have actually talked about on the podcast. Mm-mm. Because with Kim and I don't feel like either one of us specifically had a fear to speak out because it was a stranger, right? So like, well, yeah, Kim, I know you have complex feelings because you have. Yep. I know. I'm talking about the instance that we are known for.
The victimizations that you know about.
Yes. Correct. When you're dealing with like a stranger type of situation, it's not often that you would necessarily have this fear to speak out. But when you're talking about someone that you work with, someone that's influential, when you're talking about someone that you know, or someone that you know is going to have an attorney or...
Yeah, I just keep thinking about the financial deficit between those two.
I'm so glad that you're speaking to this because I feel like this is something that, like you said, we're like, yeah, share your story. But this is a very real reason why a ton of people have a hard time speaking out. And then when you go into these further traumas of, okay, so I did the one thing that I was told to do, which is reach out to a rape crisis center, and now I'm being penalized for it. It's just so frustrating.
Why didn't you come forward sooner? Why didn't you report this right here? This is why.
Right.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. What do we do? What do we do with this?
I think conversations like this, and I do think I'm going to come back to that question with kind of going back. We're going to do a little dance real quick.
Sure.
Another thing about coming forward, I feel like there's this idea, especially when maybe your perpetrator is in the public eye or something, that you can just call a journalist. But again, you know, editors are looking for specific stories. And often, is this going to be click-worthy enough? Like, is this going to be, are we able to sensationalize this person's trauma enough that it's worthwhile to us? And I feel like I've seen a lot of reporters, especially over the past few years, struggle with that and try to, it's hard because there's so many stories to be told, but historically, only certain types of stories are told, and it's not raw, authentic storytelling. I mean, there is a lot of really, really good reporting, but I want the nitty gritty that, you know, survivors can relate to. And even for myself, I worked with a couple of different big publications for months on stories, had a publication day, was ready to go. Lawyer calls in, threatens to sue enough. It ends up not being, you know, worth it for them to take the risk. So then the story goes away and it's the survivor is continuously silenced again. And I know many survivors that something like that has happened to. And that, again, just that these traditional means that you see so much, you know, talked about, yes, and they're great and we need more of them, but it's not, I don't know, people are like, oh, just sue them. Okay, let me just find like a lawyer who's willing to even talk to me, has availability, can take me on. It's just, it's not as quote unquote easy as people in the bleacher seats, you know, online seem to think. conversations, podcasts like this. I know you both do a lot of like events and like keynote speaking, having events, building communities. I think having places for that authentic storytelling where you can tell things that and share things and have dialogue that, you know, a lawyer and people in a boardroom aren't, you know, going back and forth on whether or not they can publish it. A real space for people to come together. You know, I'm sure we could go all day about legislation that needed us to change. I know that you maybe were just kind of asking like rhetorically, but I do think that there is a lot of really good work that is being done. It's just, there's so much to be done and we're up against so much, but just a reminder to all of us that, you know, we're not doing what needs to be done. It just, we're going up some against some systems and cultures that don't support survivors.
Well, and bottom line is nothing concrete is going to change until the people who have not been victimized are just as angered and outraged and looking for change as those of us who are. You have to want to get involved and you have to want this to change just as much as we do.
It shouldn't just be a survivor issue. It's actually a huge public health crisis that everyone should be involved with trying to prevent and address appropriately when it does happen.
So we always ask for your specific call to action. If you were to activate all of our listeners to do just one thing, what do you think that that would be?
I think a call to action would be to, I'm going to split this up a little bit. Not that it's our identities are ever as black and white as this, but if you personally identify as a victim or survivor, the call to action is going to be a little different as somebody who is maybe a supporter or want to be a supporter. I think survivors really, really try to be kind to yourself, whether that, you know, your call to action is to take the day off, to go take a bath, to call a friend, to grant yourself what can hopefully be even a few moments of safety and joy for yourself. Beyond that, I think read an article, you know, read a book, listen to a podcast. You know, survivors already do so much labor and emotional labor, physical labor, especially often on trying to educate the people in their lives, what they are going through, what they're experiencing. The survivors in your life are not Google. Do some research on your own and show up for them without having to be asked. And download this podcast and all the other episodes of Survivor's Guide to True Crime.
Yeah, I mean, our goal is to be the guidebook for people to know how to support themselves and others. So yeah, I mean, we definitely advocate that you listen to all of our episodes. Now, as for you, for the people that love this episode and they say, we want more of Lauren, we want more of her story, we want to follow her, where can they find you, follow you, keep in touch with you?
Yes, thank you for asking that. I am on both Instagram and Twitter, TBD for how long I'll be on Twitter, but at MTMV Community. You can also email me at metoomanyvoices@gmail.com. I always do my best to answer any DMs, comments. So come join the community.
What a beaming light to have in the community that you've created for taking something so awful that has granted you just no reprieve from it whatsoever, that you are able to take that and create such a safe, uplifting, and inspirational place for others where they can truly feel found. Just thank you for the work that you do every single day for no reason other than it's the right thing to do.
Well, thank you. My goal has always been if I can support people, make them feel a little less alone, a little bit less like I have along my journey. That's all I want to do.
Perfect. Well, thank you, Lauren, so much for your time and just the heart that you've given, especially to this conversation. I know they're not easy, and be sure to take care of yourself afterwards. And just for all of our listeners out there, do yourself a favor. Make sure you're following MTMV Community to find all of the incredible work that Lauren is doing, but more importantly, the community that has been built there. You will love all of the content that is being put out, and it is a great space to just reclaim a little bit of who you are and who you want to be. So if you're looking for inspiration or just that feeling of belonging, it's a great place to find yourself.
Thank you again, Lauren, for joining us. And to all of our listeners, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for doing all that you do and for being you.
Survivor's Guide to True Crime is hosted and executive produced by Kimberly Corbin Rourke and Kara Robinson Chamberlain. If you love what we do here, please don't forget to follow, rate, and review the show in your podcast player. It's an easy and free way to help us and help more people find the show. To learn more about the guests featured or to find resources and information discussed on the show, visit survivorsguidetotruecrime.com.
Thanks for listening.
Well, see you later.
Quick question. What the fuck?